Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our website is Catholicism.org. The website for this show is reconquest.net. My email address is bam@catholicism.org. I can also be found easily on Twitter @brother_Andre and on Facebook. Tonight's show is on Christian manhood and the family. And I'm thinking that in all likelihood, this will probably be one of many shows on the subject we'll be doing over the years. I don't have any other specific ones lined up, but I believe that this is such an important subject that will and one that's so multifaceted that we'll probably hit it many times over the years. My guest in the second segment will be Mr. Sam Guzman, who's the communications director for Pro-Life Wisconsin, and also the founder and editor of the very popular blog, The Catholic Gentleman, which you can very easily find. It's thecatholicgentleman.net, but just search for The Catholic Gentleman and you will find it. Now, on to the subject of Christian manhood and the family. Numerous books have been authored in recent memory on the crisis of fatherhood and on the more fundamental crisis of manhood. Books like Fatherless America, The End of Men, Absent Fathers, Lost Sons, Life Without Father, and Fatherless Generation, to list but a few that describe or attempt to solve the crisis from a variety of viewpoints, some of which we would consider very wrong-headed. So clueless have we become about questions of gender that there's even a book that explains in 336 pages that men and women are actually different, and it's called Why Gender Matters: What Parents and Teachers Need to Know About the Emerging Science of Sex Differences by Leonard Sachs, MD, PhD. So imagine that. What our ancestors knew from common sense, we have to learn from a new and emerging science. It is self-evident that there's a massive crisis of manhood and fatherhood today. But it's nothing new. It predates the sexual revolution, which served to accelerate it dramatically. In 1948, Ed Willock lamented the effeminization of religion in an insightful Integrity magazine article entitled Holiness for Men. The liturgical revolution of the late 60s and early 70s effectively stripped the priest of the ritual masculinity he was invested with in the traditional rites of the church, which were very virile, patriarchal, and in the case of the Mass, very clearly sacrificial in character. But Mr. Willock noticed in 1948 that religion, specifically Catholic religion, was being effeminized. Nowadays in the Catholic liturgy, the priest is made something of the matriarchal caring nurturer and no longer the patriarchal priest offering sacrifice. And I'm not denying that they truly offer sacrifice. That's not the point. The point is in the prayers of the Mass and the whole orientation of the rubrics and so forth, the masculinity of the priesthood is seriously diminished. On par with this is another problem in the priesthood, which is that the dogmatic, moral, and ascetical dilution of priestly formation has seriously impeded spiritual fatherhood. And when you consider that priests are spiritual fathers, if their spiritual fatherhood is impeded, then they're less capable of offering help to men to be truly holy in a masculine way. And of course, masculine holiness and feminine holiness are going to be different. Ultimately, holiness is the love of God in your soul by sanctifying grace. But if you're a man, you're going to be holy in a masculine way. If you're a woman, you're going to be holy in a feminine way. And that's the way that God intended it to be. So priests whose spiritual fatherhood has somehow compromised are going to be of less help to laymen who should be told in masculine ways how to sanctify themselves and how to practice the virtues. Tied in with the attack on manhood and masculinity, of course, is the attack on the family. Now, it's a common place to say that the family is under attack, isn't it? We've all heard it. But let's get specific and name the particular ways that the family is under attack. Big government attacks the family by redefining it in an unnatural way, by equating the union of two men or two women with marriage. Government earlier attacked the family by allowing divorce, which is contrary to the very nature of matrimony, even on the natural level. Divorce is detrimental to the stable environment needed for the rearing and education of children. Feminism attacks the family by detracting from the father's headship of the family and by doing away with gender roles in other ways. The sexual revolution attacked the family by its large-scale separation of sexual pleasure from marriage and from the fundamental purposes of matrimony, which is the begetting and rearing of children according to God's plan. But this little catalog of the different ways that the family is being attacked only scratches the surface. It barely scratches the surface of the real problems. Gary Potter, who contributes to our website, Catholicism.org, wrote a very insightful article that we published called Why Liberalism Targets the Family. And his article, which was fairly short and typical of Gary, it was very powerful as well, was really Gary taking the opportunity to share several very good passages from a book by the great Jesuit theologian Louis Cardinal Billot, who lived from 1846 to 1931. The book is called Liberalism, A Criticism of Its Basic Principles in Diverse Forms. This is one of the few of Cardinal Billot's books that is available in English, or at least was available in English at one time. You might be able to find a used copy someplace. Gary's article, this is Gary now, not Cardinal Billot, he says this: in truth, liberalism is intolerant of anything that can make a claim to our allegiance prior to the unquestioning obedience exacted by that with which it seeks to replace everything, the state. That is, liberal government cannot, and increasingly will not, tolerate independent centers of power. So all those things that we refer to as intermediate societies that stand between man and the state are things that the state, the big state, the liberal state, the statist state, what we call big government, can't stand and wants to do away with. And all this has something to do with the social contract theories popular in the 19th century, that, or even dating back before, the really going back to the 18th century, and that was part and parcel of the French Revolution, but also ended up in Anglo-Saxon liberalism, and which we in the United States have very largely inherited as part of our liberal Anglo-American heritage. So Gary quotes Cardinal Billot at some length, and I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs. Now, keep in mind, this was written before 1922. 1922 is when the English translation came out. I don't know exactly when the book was written. I couldn't find out, but it's before 1922. So it's in a style that's not going to be very familiar to us today. The first of all societies is the society which has been instituted by God himself, the author of nature, a society which is beneficent among all others, anterior to all political society, meaning coming before it, attuned to the more intimate affections of the human heart, and demanded by the more evident needs of both our moral and physical life. I mean the domestic society, commonly known as the family. It then, first of all, will experience the adverse blows of liberalism, which later, as far as it lies, by every means and device, by every effort, by every resource at its disposal, which latter, meaning the family itself, liberalism will seek the destruction and elimination of the family, so that one might say that, for the legislators of the revolution, and he's speaking of the French Revolution, this in truth was the Carthage to be destroyed. And liberalism destroys it first in its foundation, for the foundation of the family is marriage, and that indissoluble marriage, through an indivisible obligation binding in common both the man and the woman unto the very end. Moreover, how contrary such an obligation is to the liberty and emancipation of the individual is easy for all to see at a glance. Nevertheless, certain prejudices still continue to be rooted in the minds of men, which do not allow the intended reformation to be carried out hastily. Okay, so he's being slightly ironic and sarcastic and showing what they think. Hence, liberalism will begin with the reduction of marriage to the status of a mere civil contract, sanctioned only by the civil law. By the way, excuse me, we have in this country marriage licenses. Something that in no way should the church participate in, because the church has no business going to the state to sanction its marriages. Marriage is a sacrament, it's a Catholic sacrament, and we have no business having our priests be sanctioned by the church, by the state. In many countries in Europe, they fought the marriage license imposition and usurpation on the part of the secular state. But in this country, they just sort of lay down and played dead. But notice when he's talking about it being reduced to a civil contract, he's saying that that in itself is a problem. Here in this country, Catholics, other Christians, even they have no problem with the marriage being recognized as a civil contract. But as soon as you acknowledge that it's a civil contract, then the state can do what it wants with it. It can change it, and it can change the character of that contract. And that's exactly, of course, what they're doing now with this monstrous oxymoron that we refer to as same-sex marriage. All right, so if I'm trying to find where I left off. Okay, so liberalism destroys it first in its foundation, for the foundation of the family is marriage, and that indissoluble marriage through an indivisible obligation binding in common both the man and the woman at the very end. Let's see. Hence, liberalism will begin with the reduction of marriage to the status of a mere civil contract sanctioned by the civil law. Then, from civil marriage, there will be an easy transmission to legal divorce, and not without reason, because whatever can be bound by the authority of the civil law can also be dissolved and rescinded by the authority of that same law. Finally, from legal divorce, a gradual and imperceptible descent will be prepared to free love. And when this has come to pass, there will not survive any more recognizable vestige of the family that exists among beasts. And I think that the cardinal was, in a way, anticipating exactly what we've got today, which is bestial. Continuing with the cardinal, you see then how liberalism intends by every means and device to accomplish the destruction of the family by attacking its ultimate foundation. Again, that ultimate foundation is marriage. It likewise intends to destroy the family and its authority. In the first place, it does so by means of laws depriving the father of the family of the power of free disposal of his property. But secondly, and especially, this is done through the laws of public and obligatory instruction, whereby the education of the children is virtually taken away from the parents, and the entire control of the public school system is so completely given over to the civil authority that no recognition whatsoever is accorded to the possible right of any other authority to intervene in respect of the discipline or course of study or concerning the choice or approbation of teachers. Now, of course, he's writing in the European context in France, and he's talking about the state being in entire control of the public school system. That might seem strange to us because, of course, in this country, the public school system are government schools. Some people call them government indoctrination centers. But the fact is that in the European context, many public schools were religious in nature and were run by religious institutions. Although after the revolution, there was a very spotty history concerning that in France. Now, that's what the cardinal has said. I think he was very prophetical, especially that bit about being bestial. Cardinal Billot also explains why liberalism seeks the destruction of the family and every other society besides the modern mega state. The reasoning becomes a bit subtle, but it's there in Gary Potter's article to read. It has to do with liberalism's love of social contract theory and its loathing of all the intermediate institutions, including the family, that insulate the individual from the power of the state. Read Gary's article if you'd like to explore this further. Again, the name of the article is Why Liberalism Targets the Family. Why Liberalism Targets the Family, and it's on Catholicism.org. I link to it from the write-up of tonight's show on Reconquest.net. So if you go to Reconquest.net and read about episode 6, you will find that. Ultimately, it's not warped politicians, political theorists, big government apparatchiks, progressive ideologues, or other evil men who are orchestrating this attack on the family. Ultimately, it's the devil who uses these people as useful idiots. He's the one who hates the family so much. Both the approved Marian apparition of Our Lady of Good Success in Quito, Ecuador in the 17th century, and the Fatima visionary, Sister Lucy of the Immaculate Heart, assure us that the devil is behind this attack on the family. So we have private revelations telling us it's diabolical, but we don't even need that. We can see that it's diabolical in character. And we have a great luminary, great theologian, great thinker. By the way, Cardinal Billot is known, among other things, as the ghost writer of Pope St. Pius X's encyclical Pascendi Dominici Gregis, the great condemnation of modernism. So this is no lightweight. We have, in the words of Cardinal Billot, that liberalism, which is, of course, diabolical in nature and hates religion, ultimately seeks the destruction of the family. Now, speaking of the diabolical character of the attack on the family, and by extension on manhood, womanhood, masculinity, femininity, and all of the other things that fit into this. Speaking of that, I want to quote from Sam Guzman, whom I'm going to be interviewing in a few minutes, from an article that he posted on his blog. It's called Satan Hates the Family. Here's why. Here's a few paragraphs of Sam's wisdom before we get to hear Sam himself. The final war between Satan and the Lord God is over the family. Why? Because the family is an icon of the Most Holy Trinity. The communion of love between the three persons is the original family. This divine communion is fruitful. That is, it brings forth life. It cannot help to do so. It cannot help but do so. Life bursts forth from the love of the Holy Trinity. The family is the earthly image of the icon of Trinitarian love. The communion of love between husband and wife is designed to be fruitful. This is why contraception is so evil, to bring forth life. In a very real sense, married love creates. This is why marriage carries the dignity of a sacrament, because it is a holy image of the Trinity. Only God can truly create. Satan cannot. And Satan hates this fact. He is sterile in every sense of the word. He hates the Trinity because he envies its life-giving and creative power, and he hates the family because it mirrors the Trinity. And what better way to mock and warp the life-giving love of the Holy Trinity than to attempt to redefine marriage as something that cannot bring forth life, to redefine it as something inverted and sterile like Satan himself. This is what homosexual marriage really is, and marriage is in quotes there. Satan's mockery of the family, and thus of the Trinity. The good news is, our Lord, through the Immaculate Virgin, will crush Satan's head. Just when his victory seems sure, he will meet with a sudden defeat. Count on it. Now, one thing I like about Mr. Guzman is that he's not just bellyaching and bemoaning all of the problems in the church and the world and society at large and so forth. He's actually talking about remedies, which is quite a lot of what he does on his blog. And he also is a very pious Catholic, and he's very Marian, and he knows that the Immaculate Virgin will crush Satan's head, and there will be a victory. By the way, I won't quote it because I don't have enough time, but the private revelation of Our Lady of Good Success in Quito, Ecuador, again, 18th century revelation, that private revelation said very clearly that when it looks like the devil has won, he'll have a sudden defeat. He will suffer a sudden defeat. So we are going to win this. It's not a question. As Our Lady said, my Immaculate Heart will triumph, and there will be a reconquest. She didn't use those words. I'm adding that. So please stick around. This is Brother Andre on the Reconquest Show on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. I'll be back in a few minutes to interview my guest, Mr. Sam Guzman.
You're listening to Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie, seeking that which was lost and fighting for it. Exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.